GNC596. It's Monday, July 26th, and you're listening to the daytime edition of the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Well, I got a great early show for you. It seems very strange to be starting and recording the show at 12:20 in the afternoon. It's really weird. Had to make some massive refinements to the studio because this is a studio with windows in it. But I got a great show for you. Strap in. Here it comes.
All right, people, I need a go, no-go for the Geek News Central podcast. Digital archive recorders.
We're go fly.
Microphone.
We're go fly.
Video feed.
Go.
Web browser.
Go.
RSS data stream aggregator.
Go fly.
Interflux Toddism suppressor.
All right. I'm confused.
Host readiness check.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
The Geek News Central podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to go. Cue Todd in...
Five.
Button, who's got the button?
Four.
There's no cause for alarm.
Three.
Everybody hold on to something.
Two.
Just press the button.
One.
It's showtime.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast. My name is Todd Cochran. And of course, I want to welcome you to the show. Of course, we're recording here from the beautiful state of Hawaii via the Geek News Central Studio overlooking Greater Oahu. And I want to give a warm welcome to the Ohana, the longtime listeners of the show. Thanks for tuning in and being part of the show. Of course, if you're catching us via download, hey, that's the way to get her because you'll be guaranteed to never miss an episode of the show. This is show number 596, so we're on the countdown to show 600. And over the next 2 days, I'm going to be recording the show daytime. And that's kind of unusual for me to do a daytime show. So got some things that conflict in the evening. So decided to go ahead and give a couple of daytime recordings. But it really doesn't matter for the majority of you that are tuning in. But for those of you that are watching live, welcome to the show. And if this is your first time checking the show out, make sure, of course, get over to geeknewscentral.com. Check out all the great content over there. Of course, check out our archive podcast available via the podcast link on the website. We have listeners that are subscribed to the show from 165 countries worldwide. And if you're one of those listeners outside the United States, of course, again, welcome to the Ohana. Welcome to the family here. And make sure you get signed up for our newsletter. Our newsletter contains everything that I'm going to talk about during the show today. Articles have been submitted by listeners like you. If you have something you want to submit to the show for me to cover or to talk about, geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com, where the voicemail hotline is 619-342-7365. That's open 24 hours a day, really, 365 days a year. So anytime you want to call in, leave a comment on the show, you can do so. And again, as I said earlier, subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode. If you are an owner of a Roku, or you have your Apple TV hacked to use Boxy, or you're one of the lucky ones to get one of the early editions of the Boxy device by D-Link, which is not ready for public review yet, or public distribution yet, watch us on the Tech Podcast channel. And you can find me over there. And, of course, you can find me on the Blueberry channel as well. So that audience continues to grow massively. I know that we had a little technical issue that I induced from the last show. For those of you that may have tried to watch the show immediately when it came up live on the Roku device, but it took me a couple hours to get that fixed and learned something in the process. I tweaked one video setting, and the device did not like it, but that's one thing it's beauty about doing video is you always have the master to fall back upon. And just recompiled and or actually, yeah, recompiled and then re-uploaded and we're good to go. So lots going on here. It's been it's a beautiful day here in Honolulu. The wind is just the trade winds are blowing nice and hard. I've actually had to shut the one side window to the room and block it off so we wouldn't get too much exterior light. But it's a beautiful day here, and we spent a couple of beautiful days out in the sun. As I had talked about in the last show, I had planned on loading the kids up on Friday and taking them to the beach. And about the time I finished up my show, my contractor called me and said, hey, I can come tomorrow to tomorrow on Saturday to finish working on the project they'd been working on in the house. And because he's only available, he's basically doing the project here in the house on the side. And I said, yeah, come on tomorrow and come Saturday. And then so we made it up to the kids on Sunday, took them down to the beach and hung out all day yesterday. It was absolutely gorgeous. It makes me realize one of the reasons, you know, so oftentimes I get stuck behind this desk and the computer screen, and I often forget where I live. And people pay big money to come to Hawaii to vacation, enjoy our beaches and the weather. And it really was nice just to kind of get out and really act like a tourist on Sunday. It was fun, and kids enjoyed it. We're going to do it more often. It's just one of those things that we both kind of looked at each other and did one of those like, wow, what are, you know, we need to get out more. So weekends were great. Hey, I did get an update for those of you that got a swag package. Yes, the swag package has made it. So the bandits that have been going through the local area here and breaking into vehicles did not steal stuff out of my mailbox, which is good. So it looks like the swag package has made it out on schedule. Of course, now that I know that, I will once again today in the newsletter, I will put in the address that you can send a self-stamped addressed envelope to me to receive some swag. And really, the best ones to send are those little 5x7 ones. That way I can stuff more stuff in. If you send an envelope, just a regular envelope, that's cool too. But I'm going to go ahead and reopen that back up. I'll have people have the address in the newsletter today on where you can send your self-stamped addressed envelope for me to mail some swag back to you. Well, we're focusing on show 600. 600 is coming fast, really. It's just right around the corner here. We're on the major countdown for that. If you have comments about what you think we should change at show 600, and really the number of comments that have come in on what we should change has been minimal. So that makes me wonder, are we doing the right thing? Is everything, and are we firing on all cylinders here and not missing a beat? And if that's the case, I'm very, very happy for that. Only time will tell whether or not you guys agree or not, but feel free to definitely send me an email, geeknews@gmail.com, or the voicemail hotline, again, at 619-342-7365, and let me know what we should do to really kind of make a change to show at show 600. I notice on this camera over here, it looks a little lopsided. I think as I was moving stuff for the contractor, I did not level that tripod, so I can see where the camera's tilted. That ought to give you a nice tilt. I'm looking over on the monitor here. Yeah, it's not completely right. So, oh man, just goes with showing that at some point we're going to have to move the studio into to the garage. Actually, we talked about that, building a studio in the garage now, and that is back on the forefront. Kids are getting the age group where I have a 12-year-old and a 7-year-old bunking together. Not necessarily, they basically have their own beds, of course, in their own bedroom. But space is such a premium here in Hawaii with the housing costs being what they are. Using one of the rooms in the house as a studio, I really need to open this up and let it be a bedroom again, and then move the whole operation out in the garage. So we're going to talk about that. Probably won't start construction until 2011, but I think that is the plan, is to move within the next year to the garage and finally make that a commitment to do that. So that'll be one thing we'll be doing, and that's as we probably approach show 700, but things are going good. Of course, just as an update on my stuff before we get into the tech here, going to school is killing me. I'm taking a class right now that is just taking way too many hours than I thought it would. One of the hardest courses I have taken, and I'll be happy when this 12 weeks are over because it's going to be a rough one. It sure is. Hey, one thing I did buy, and I don't know if you guys are familiar with this or not, let me grab these, is I bought a cable set for the iPad, and basically it allows me to hook the iPad up and get a composite video signal. So what I'm going to do is, how many of you have jailbroke your iPad? In order to get a full screen view on your iPad, you have to jailbreak it. And I've got this nice cable set here, and testing it on the TriCaster. Everything was good, but it only showed what Apple wanted you to see and not what I necessarily wanted you to see. So what's your guys' experience been with jailbreaking iPad? Love to hear your feedback on that, because I'm going to have to go down that road if I want to plug this thing into the new TC-XD850 TriCaster that is due to be delivered mid-next month. And So I wanted to bring, you know, some more features into the show. We're actually be able to show apps, even on the iPhone and on the iPad. So I'm going to go down that road here a little bit and work that angle in as far as the show. We'll have some segments on the iPad and other devices I can actually patch into the system. I think that will be cool to do. I got an email this morning, and this is more business / podcasting related. I got an email from one of our folks that we have on Advertising Buy, and basically he is hosting his show over on Mevio. And Mevio is another web, you know, basically they have a number of shows over there. They're creating content and have received a huge amount of money in venture capital dollars and so forth. And I don't know if they would consider us a competitor or not, but I guess we can consider them a little bit of a competitor. But they basically emailed me and say, hey, we're being told with our new contract that we can't run any of your advertisements in any of the shows that we host over there. And they just wanted to let us know they're going to be, hang on a second.
Who's knocking?
I had someone in the house knocking. They know I'm doing a show. I think my wife forgot. Oh yeah, he's doing a show during the daytime. But anyway, what basically it is for those of you that are podcasters that listen to the show, this would be a challenge for you if you're running ads with us and you're hosting your media over at Mevio. Just a forewarning, you may have to make different arrangements for that particular media. So, they're free to do what they want to do as far as making policy changes at their company. And we respect that. They're a company that has to make money on their on the content that they have on their website, but it doesn't look like we'll be able to sell into that content anymore through the show independent show producers that are hosting over there. But so it's just one of those things that, one of those little policy changes that will affect some folks. For the most part, the majority, high majority of the folks that we work with have their own websites, their own .coms, have their own hosting accounts, have their control of their own RSS feed, which is good. So it's not really an issue. Only maybe 1-2% of the folks that we work with are going to be impacted. So, but anyway, it's just one of those things. And of course, if you are thinking about bringing up putting a website up, if you're thinking about launching a blog or a podcast or doing something, it's always good to have really control of your media and control of your branding and the control of your website. And to do that, you should consider GoDaddy as being the place to go to find or to actually host your website, and also consider buying domains over there. They got some great services. The geeknewscentral.com website is hosted at GoDaddy, and they've been a longtime sponsor here at the show. As we talked about in the last show, they've got the new .co domains available now. Of course, the land rush is on for those. But if you're going to have a show or do something on your own on the web, make sure you control your own branding, control your own destiny. Don't put that into someone else's hands. There's lots of great tools out there, lots of great services on top of GoDaddy that really allows you to be your own entity and build your own network and build your own dream instead of building it within the confines of someone else's dream per se. So, if you get over to GoDaddy and you're looking for a product or service, don't forget our promo codes. You can use the promo code Todd. That'll save you 10% on non-domain orders. Geek5 will save you 15% on orders $20 or more. ComSale will save you money on .coms. And as of August 2nd, that ComSale code will once again be good for a renewal. So we're looking forward to that getting turned back on. But lots of promo codes to be available to use betting on what you buy. You can go over to geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy, and you'll find all the codes and all the information. Link to that page on your blogs. Tell people about it. Send them over there. Twitter it, whatever you want to do. And that's where you get the best savings at GoDaddy, is through using our non-expiring promotion codes. And thanks for GoDaddy for being a longtime sponsor. And, don't forget, not only do you have the iPhone app, the BlackBerry app, and the Android app that's by GoDaddy, you control a lot of your products and services right through that mobile device. Along with that, been playing a little bit more with the GoToMeeting app on the iPad, and pretty slick. It really, really was cool. I specifically set up some meetings where I knew I was going to be able to use the iPad in conjunction with it, and it really worked well. So, you know, you've heard me obviously talk about GoToMeeting a number of times, and you know that it's the easiest and most convenient way to hold an online meeting from your Mac and PC. And with the addition of the application for the iPad tablet, really you can be anywhere to attend a meeting. I mean anywhere, on the beach, in your car. You don't have to fire up your laptop, just one click to turn on the, you know, turn on your iPad, load the application, put in the meeting number, boom, you're in. And you can see the host computer on your iPad screen. You connect audio through your iPad, which is cool, or over the phone. And as a listener of this show, you can get a free 30-day trial of GoToMeeting at GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast for a free 30-day trial. And once you try it, I think you'll be like, whoa, that's slick. And it really is. It's really, really slick. Let me look through my list of stuff, and here we'll get into the tech content. That's what you guys have come for today. Got that covered. Don't forget the Cafe Press site where we have our Ohana store, cafepress.com/Ohana store, and all of our offers at geeknewscentral.com/offers, and become an insider at geeknewscentral.com/insider. Okay, let's get into the stack here. And I was a little bit concerned whether or not I was going to have enough stuff to go through, and had no issue whatsoever. But how many of you own a Sprint Palm Pixie? Well, I guess the Palm Pixie that comes by Sprint does not by default have Wi-Fi built in. Well, some very entrepreneuring hackers have come up with a way for you to basically get Wi-Fi via a radio board swap within the Sprint device. Now, not everyone is going to have one of these, cards laying around that they're going to be able to pull out of another device to stick in their current phone. But really what they've done here is they've given this phone capability that it would not normally have, and something that they did not want you to have with it. But if you've got a Sprint Palm Pixie, I'd love to hear if you're willing to roll the dice and put this Wi-Fi radio, or basically the Wi-Fi, different Wi-Fi card in, and how it works out for you. So that's kind of cool on the tech side. You know, I'll be honest with you, I've never even seen one of these phones. You know, ever since we started this show, boy, oh boy, back in 2004, we've talked a number of times about Walmart and their RFID tags. And we all know that Walmart uses RFID extensively within their stores for inventory control. It's tied into their ordering process. And this is one of the reasons that Walmart has been able to stay so efficient and keep their operating margins low and not keeping stock on hand, is they really employ the just-in-time type of delivery methods. In other words, if they know all of a sudden, okay, I'm down to 100 of X brand of product, and that is their low limit, that automatically triggers their ordering system to order whatever the next increment that they're supposed to have on hand. And then using seasonal flows of purchases and so forth, they're able to much better really keep the stocks completely keep the shelves completely stocked at all times. And, you know, they've been using RFID for years. I was not a big proponent of it in the beginning, but I understand how they do it now. But privacy advocates are all of a sudden just freaking out now because Walmart has decided to add RFID tags to individual items. Now, it used to be the only individual items that were really tagged were high-end items, things like razor blades, which had a high pilferage rate and so forth. So this is going to be interesting here. The buying power that Walmart has is unbelievable. They can basically tell a company, you will do this if you want to have a product in our store. And so they're going to be kicking off initiative next month, and primarily in the clothes section, to basically track clothes. You know, they can really see at what point, okay, five things have come out of the store. They're going to be able to track really apparel movement. And this is a very interesting how they, I guess, is one to prevent stuff from being stolen, number two, I guess, also to really increase that, you know, that supply and demand, so where they can actually probably detect if a garment has been picked off a rack, looked at, and put back on. So it may give them some insight into shopper techniques, what, you know, what shoppers are looking for. You know, you think about that. How many times have you taken a something off a clothing rack, you've looked at it, and you put it back? Well, if that's done 10 times, you know that at that point, that item is not selling real well. Maybe it shouldn't be in the store, but if it comes off the rack, it's sold, and it doesn't come back on, you know, they can really do some infinite amount of buying analysis to really make a determination on what needs to be in the store and what doesn't. It also is going to track on a person-by-person basis on what you're buying. So they're going to know if you took those, if you, well, here's the bad thing. You know, if you were wearing a size 36-inch pants the week before, and the next week you came in and got a size 38, and then 3 months later came in and got a 40, they're definitely going to know that you have been gaining some weight. So maybe what they'll do is send you a targeted advertisement about weight loss products. Who knows? Or, you know, gym equipment. So what they'll be able to track on an individual case-by-case basis is going to be huge. So unless you're going through there and paying cash, where they're not going to track your purchases. But, you know, I spend a lot of time on the road, and very, very rarely do I see people pulling out cash to pay for stuff. They pull out their share check card. They pay out a Visa card that they're collecting points on, whatever it may be. So this is going to be an interesting ramp up of the use of RFID tags. I think it was well predicted. And of course, if those RFID tags are embedded in the clothes, it could become very scary what they're actually able to track. Okay, let's go ahead and move on here. The folks at BMW, GM, Mitsubishi, Hyundai, Peugeot, and a number of other automobile manufacturers have announced that they're going to be building upon what they call the MIGO handset platform for an actual in-dash system. I'm not very familiar with MIGO, but MIGO is, I do know, is Linux-based, and it's primarily used in phones where they use a lot of, where you can have a lot of, like, it's tied to videos and tied to music, and there's all kinds of little features, but they're saying here that that some of these companies, have, I know who made this actual reference. Let me see if I can see who made the actual, which manufacturer did. It doesn't say, it doesn't quote. Oh, actually, it was a president of Geneva. Who's that? Anyway, doesn't matter, but says this company selected MIGO as an open source basis for our platform because it is technically innovative, can provide cross-architecture build support required for our references, said Graham Semethurst, president of GENIVI. He says, working with MIGO, we expect to establish a solution that effectively merges needs with those of the other MIGO target device categories. In other words, these different vehicles that these are going to go into. So maybe this is these particular automobile manufacturers' plan here to try to catch up with Ford Sync. You know, they're going to have to work hard. Ford Sync's way, way ahead. Hey, as we talked about in the last show, the folks at Panasonic are coming out with a consumer version of a 3G camera. And Engadget's got a little bit more information on it today. Not a lot, but you know, this is exciting stuff here, and I don't know how big of a take up it's going to have, but there's been some more images that have been leaked of the purported device, but still no price tag on it, and but we do know that the camera is going to shoot in 1080p, and it's going to be using AVCHD at 60 frames per second. And it's going to have an image stabilization technology that's going to be built into it. And, of course, it's going to be in black. And it's really, they've toned it to almost look like one of the Sony cameras. The Sony cameras are traditionally really jet black. Canons are white and, well, not necessarily white, but an off color with red stripes. So be curious to see how this is going to move forward. But the Panasonic folks, again, a 3D camera consumer grade camcorder And we'll see what the pricing on this is. And I bet you consumer pricing again is going to be $1,500-$1,600. Only time will tell. All right, the CTIA, and they are the group that basically represents the folks in the cell business. But they have filed a lawsuit to block the cell phone radiation law going down in San Francisco. Now, what this is it says the CTIA group representing mobile operators is trying to block a San Francisco ordinance that would require stores to disclose radiation levels for the phones they sell. This lawsuit argues that the ordinance will unlawfully interfere with the U.S. FCC Communications Authority over cell phones. And this was filed in the Northern District of Columbia, and they're going to try to block the ordinance. Now, if you think about this, the FCC already goes through, and on every consumer device that gets sold, they go through and basically rate it safe, say it meets our standards, it doesn't transmit too much power. You know, you're not going to get an X-ray every time you transmit the phone. So it is interesting here how the CTIA is going to go against, basically going to fight this. They're going to basically say, hey, the feds have got this covered. You have no reason to have this ordinance. What do you guys think about this? I think we all know that if you have a mobile device, it's probably a good idea to use a hands-free, you know, with the device, be on Bluetooth. Don't always have the thing stuck to your ear. I think anyone that has even some modicum of understanding of RF energy will understand that probably over many, many years of RF exposure, even as small of a power it is that's coming out of these phones, it's probably not a good idea to have that next to your head. Now, here's another thing to think about. Where do you have your phone when it's not in your ear? It's in your pocket. So the question then becomes, fellas, is that necessarily a good idea as well? do we put it in our back pocket or, you know, where? And, you know, if you think about this, just, you know, let's just say that there's obviously the FCC says it's safe. It says we can have it beside our ears and we're not going to have an issue. But if you really think long and hard on this and you really consider everything that we don't know, in other words, the longevity of using these smaller cell phones with high power, you know, right next to our head. It used to be this little antenna that stuck out. Remember those phones? And now the antennas are a little more differently, you know, configured. Where's a safe place to have that thing? I think best place is on a table next to you, not in your pocket if you can help it. Just over the long term, all right? I'm just over the long term here. Hey, there's three or four great articles that were written up by our contributing editors over at Geek News Central. The first one was by Andrew, and it's really, as I read through this, it's really good. It's on the changing face of news and journalism. And Andrew is overseas, actually lives in the UK, and he's got a great perspective on this here. So I'd like you guys to go through and check that out. And he's basically going upon some articles that he's read recently, and it's formed some opinions that he has. But as he quotes here in the article, it says, as ever, it's hard to gaze in the crystal ball and predict the future. He said, from my previous post, you know that I think we have to start paying for news if we want quality journalism to continue. Now, this is Andrew's thought process on this. And whether you agree or disagree with it, and again, everyone at Geek News Central is their own independent writer, and we don't want to influence their own opinions. But what do you guys think of about the changing face of news and journalism? I think it's a pretty good article written up by Andrew over there. Another one I want to highlight is one that was written by Alan Buckingham, and it talks about, do normal people, do regular people know we're living in our life in the public? And I think, you know, if I was to, you know, just answer that quickly for Alan, and based upon in his title of his article here, I would think that most people know today that what they put online is public and they're living with those consequences. But really, I guess the question is you guys are talking to family members, people that you know, you're the geek in the house because you're listening to this show. You know, when you talk to family members, what are their concerns about living life in the public eye, basically, by putting everything online? And, you know, this what triggered this was the recent privacy flap surrounding Facebook. And he says, exactly how much are we all sharing? What can be learned from it? And why? And how much of any of this does the average person know or understand? And I guess from my perspective, I think we know a lot. But again, I'm a geek and I'm on top of this stuff. What do you guys think? Do you think the average person out there is really understanding the amount of data that we're sharing? Hey, Trucker Tom did a good article on Does the Cloud Have a Dark Side? And it talks about, you know, how the push for the cloud is continuing across all spaces. You know, Google, Microsoft, everyone wants you to do stuff in the cloud. But Tom makes a good point here. He says, you know, one day I'm in a specific location, I've got great connectivity, and I can work in the cloud. He says, the next day I'm in the same location at a different time, and there is no connectivity, and there was no way I could get to a Google Doc or a Microsoft Word document that was stored in the cloud. So he says, is this really the approach we want to take? So good one by Trucker Tom. Have that up in the show notes. And the last one that I'm going to cover from Geek News Central before we get into third-party sites is the article that was written by Tom as well. Is CNN calling for curbs on free speech? And you need to watch this video. This is a makes you wonder if CNN themselves don't look at their own internal policies and understand what they're doing. And you see that camera move? It's not staying in the spot it's supposed to. There was on July 23rd, there was a discussion between Kyra Phillips and John Roberts on CNN, but discussing the ideas that bloggers should somehow be held accountable or perhaps regulated in some way. Now, this was in response to all that brouhaha that happened last week with that gal from the Department of Agriculture in Georgia who was fired and then rehired, and the president apologized to her. It was really this big mess that happened last week with a video being shown that was, you know, taken out of context. And here's the thing. Many times, CNN, Fox, New York Times, they use anonymous sources for information, and they will say this was developed anonymously, and they won't give up their sources. But yet, at the same time, the folks at CNN thought that there should not be that provision, that that bloggers should have to name their sources, where they got information. I don't know. So anyway, I've got this link up here for you to check out, and I'm sure there's going to be more discussion on this, but I think it's pretty eye-opening what these two hosts had to say, and should really make all of us sit back and think. Hey, those of you that are on Ustream right now, I want to bring up a video. And I think I can talk over this while it's running and so that you guys can see this. Let me describe what's going on here. What, and those of you that are listening, of course, I want you guys, it'll be called A Walk Across America in the show notes. But what you've got is, let me turn the volume down. What you've got is an individual that is depicted walking across America, and they did it all with a DSLR camera. It's pretty remarkable. It really is what they've done. And they used, to put this together, they had to take over 27,000 individual photographs. This took over a 14-day period where they obviously didn't, he didn't walk all the way across America, but it, the way it looks, you can almost tell that, it's pretty cool. All I can say is you got to watch the video in real time to see it. But, this is probably one of the most remarkable videos I have seen put together as a promotional piece for Levi in years. And it's all I can tell you is, It's unlike anything I've ever seen. It really is. And I'll have it starred in the show notes. You'll have to go check it out. But literally, it looks like this guy's walking across the United States, and they did some cool visual effects, and all of it done with a DSLR camera. I'll let it continue to roll here for those of you that are watching on on Ustream, but this was over on petapixel.com. But they did over a 2-week period, and just finished up a couple weeks ago. But there's also a how-to video on how they actually did it and how they actually put this together. But I'm sure this is going to get multiple millions of views. And if nothing else, we'll go down in history being a very unique project. So anyway, I tried to talk for the full minute and 53 seconds of that video. Hopefully I didn't bore you guys that were listening too much, but you have to go check it out. Here's another one. Those of you that have a DSLR camera, here's a very big word of warning, okay? If you're getting into Vegas, or do you go to a club, or you go someplace where they're doing a laser light show, be fully aware. Oh, hang on here. Be fully aware that if they are flashing a laser and it goes across your DSLR sensor, what you see in the linked video is likely to happen to your camera. And really what it shows is it shows the camera being hit almost directly on by the laser, and then a big line develops on the actual sensor itself. It destroys the camera. So the laser light killing a 5D Mark II camera in a microsecond. And this is unrecoverable. You are unable to get the camera back up in operation. It'll no longer work forevermore. And I think if I was the guy that was taking this video with the camera, I would just be sick to my stomach. But be careful around lasers and your DSLR camera. If you get in direct line, it just may cost you the price of a brand new camera, okay? All right, next thing up is pretty cool stand for those of you that are iPad fanatics. It's $49.99, and it's designed to sit on your desktop, and you basically can reach up. It looks like a regular monitor stand, but pretty cool stuff here, and nice design. It's got that Apple look. And I definitely want to check it out. I think this is one of the cooler little products that have been put up for the iPad. Now, the problem is going to be is finding room. I don't have room on my desktop for anything right now. Some of you may, and this may work out for you. Again, it's InnoPocket.com is where the product is. I have a link up for you in the show notes here. I don't know why it is, but today it's just been like boom, boom, boom. I've been hitting all kinds of cool linked up videos. And this one's more on the science side. This is over at scienceblogs.com. It's the formation of a lightning bolt. And they played it at 300 speed, or actually 300 times slower than what the actual lightning bolt took place. They took it with a high-speed camera, in other words. But this is really cool. When you see this video, it's unlike anything. I've seen plenty of pictures being taken of lightning, but this is actual video, formation of a lightning strike. So I have that up in the show notes for you. Hey, let's talk just a little bit about, cameras in the workplace. Many people are saying that they're running into issues now where companies are basically saying, hey, if you've got a phone and it's got a camera on it, it's not allowed in the building. If you've got a phone, it's got internet connectivity, it's not allowed in the building. A lot of companies are doing that. And I know that's true for government as well. But I guess if you work in Major League Baseball, that's the case as well. So this is a picture that was taken, for those of you that aren't seeing this, was taken in Fenway Park in the corporate clubhouse area. And basically lays out the rules on use of cellular phones and PDAs and very tight restrictions. And this is more directed from the MLB, Major League Baseball, has actually directed some of this stuff. But it says, uniform personnel, clubhouse staff, and equipment staff are prohibited from using cellular phones, including any type of portable, mortable laptop, texting device, or similar portable equipment while on the bench or playing field at any time. And that would be kind of dumb, using your cell phone while you're on the field. And are prohibited from using such devices in the clubhouse within 1 hour of the start of a game. The only exception to this prohibition is the use of a wireless phone for communications between the dugout and the bullpen, so long as the device has been approved by the office of the commissioner. And this goes on and on and on and who's allowed to use one and who isn't. But, cell phone bans just don't apply to, you know, government and private companies. They also apply to being Major League Baseball. Hey, over on GigaOm, they've got a good article here, and this is something I've been thinking a lot about lately, is about the Internet of Things anywhere, anytime, anything. I think it should be anywhere, anytime, any place, right? Anyway, he goes on to say that it's being predicted, and Harbor Research has predicted, this is from GigaOm.com, Harbor Research has predicted that shipments of so-called intelligent devices will grow to 430 million devices by 2013 from 73 million in 2008. It goes on to say, while total device revenues will exceed $12 billion, the real impact is going to be on the media infrastructure. We know that devices, I'm sure, to probably the next time you buy a refrigerator, it'll probably be connected to the internet. The next time, obviously, you buy your next 40 or 50 inch TV, it'll be connected to the internet. We all, you know, we've talked about that a lot here, but it goes on beyond that. It talks about almost every device that could have an unimaginable reason to be connected to the net will be. And this is one of the worries of mobile providers, is they're saying that their mobile networks are going to have to continue to be increasing capacity to support all these new devices, because not all these are going to be devices that are going to connect to your Wi-Fi connection in your home. One of the things I have a problem here is my Roku, every once in a while, will drop the Wi-Fi connection. I have to go back and reestablish it. And it's, for me, it's no big deal. But consumers, on the most part, are going to want devices that just work. They don't want to have to worry about going in and setting up some settings and making changes to anything. They want the device to work out of the box. And so they feel that the mobile networks are going to be the best avenue for some of these low bandwidth types of devices. And it's going to tie into our electric grid. It's going to tie into, you know, repair, servicing, everything. We will have to obviously worry about privacy concerns, because these devices are going to be sending data back on usage as well. So, you know, I've talked about before on, you know, how it's becoming the point where they pretty much know what we're doing 24/7, dependent upon how connected you are. So we'll see. We'll see what happens here. But this is a pretty good article. Talks about build out, talks about challenges. And I'm not going to go into the full details of it, but link it up in the show notes. Hey, there's another article on GigaOm talking about what a T-Mobile iPhone would mean. And my family has two T-Mobile phones. My wife is using a jailbroke iPhone on T-Mobile. My kids have a non-internet connected phone. And we love their pricing and we love their service. It's as far as I'm concerned, the voice experience is better on their phones than it is on AT&T. Now, the question has to be asked, if AT&T had such a huge, huge issue with data, and T-Mobile quite a ways behind on rolling out their new infrastructure, obviously they're working very hard to get a number of cities connected with HSPA and getting connected to, you know, but their build out of their entire system is going to take some time. For me, just sitting here as, you know, trying to use some common sense on this, I don't think it's going to be possible for T-Mobile to have an iPhone in the next year or two. Because if I'm going to buy an iPhone on T-Mobile, I'm going to want to have at least as a minimum and up to the same type of connectivity I've had with AT&T. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Now, we have Edge here in Honolulu. That's in the Edge is not that fast. It'll get you by. But, you know, the T-Mobile will go into Edge mode if it has to. But, you know, I think that this would be a huge win for T-Mobile. But how are they going to roll it out on a market-by-market basis, only where they have HSPA? But we live in a world where people get in their cars and go places. So they're going to want to have the same type of connectivity. I don't know. Time will tell on this one here, but Personally, I just can't see it coming to T-Mobile anytime soon. This should not come as a surprise. U.S. telco is losing broadband subscribers, too. From AT&T's investor report, at the end of second quarter, AT&T had 16 million total wired broadband connections, up 404,000 over the last year, but down 92,000 from the first quarter 2010 levels. Total broadband connections, which included business and consumer wireline subscribers and wireless customers with 3G laptop connect cards, decreased by 93,000 in the quarter to reach 17.4. Total consumer revenue connections at the end were 444.3 million compared to 46.3 million at the end of the second quarter of 2009. Now, if we look at Verizon broadband connections totaled 9.3 million at the end of the second quarter of 2010, a 2.5% year-over-year increase. This is a net increase of 28,000 from the first quarter, as the increase in Fios internet connections more than offset decreases in DSL-based high-speed interconnections. So what that means is there's a 28,000 net new connections for the company the size of Verizon, and AT&T declines to tell something isn't going very well for them on the DSL point of view. So this goes into a little more detail, but definitely people are moving towards more cable-type connections or Fios where the speed is much higher. Hey, how many of you have been over and seen Inception? I've just been hearing from all types of geeks that this is the movie to go see. Very few people I've talked to have said it was disappointing. Some people were hoping type of a Matrix type level type of movie. It's not quite there. Predictions are not going to win any major films and film awards this year, but it's probably going to devolve into a cult following. Have not been. Should I go? Should I wait for it to come out for pay-per-view? You guys tell me, those of you that have saw it. Hey, over on Robin Good's masternewmedia.org website, how to mobilize your website and best tools to convert your blog into a mobile site. He's got a great review here. I have this linked up in the show notes, talks about plugins, different applications you can use. So another really good one. You know, these guys he does a really good job in putting together great articles. Link will be up in this. So if you want to get your website mobile, definitely check this article out. It may give you some tools. Hey, Facebook is testing a delete account option. If you have deleted your account on Facebook or if you use this, once they open it up, I want to hear from you. How many of you would delete your account on Facebook? Do you know Facebook has become the number one reason for divorce in America? I wouldn't be surprised. Anyway, so this was over at thenextweb.com. And would you delete your account if you could? Or could you not live without your Facebook? Google Music is taking a step closer to reality. If you go over to newyorkpost.com, appears that Google's plans to obviously challenge Apple's dominance in the space is advancing more rapidly than what was expected. The search giant's Android whiz, VP Andrew Rubin, is said to be having accelerated talks. This is according to the New York Post with a music industry group publishing firm of hopes of gaining digital publishing rights to as many songs as possible to enable the launch of the Google Music Store, the source said. So we'll see what happens with that as that comes. That makes sense to have a music store for the Android. And a new rule out, the EFF one has won a big one here, Electronic Frontier Foundation. There's new legal protections for really any of us that jailbreak our phones and buy software to put on it for the purpose of, you know, basically what they've come out and said is that the Copyright Office is saying that if you can buy a piece of software but can't get it on your phone, it's okay to jailbreak it to get that bought piece of software on your phone. So that's pretty cool. So in a announcement on the EFF website, they go into a little more detail of the stuff that was announced today. And let me bring this up here. What they're saying here is the Electronic Frontier has won three critical exemptions to the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. Anti-circumvention provisions today carving out new legal protections for consumers who modify their cell phones and artists who remix videos. People until now could have been sued for their non-infringing or fair use activities. Goes on to say, by granting all of EFF's application, the Copyright Office and Librarian of Congress have taken three important steps today to mitigate some of the harms caused by the DMCA, said Jennifer Granick, EFF Civil Liberties Director. And we're thrilled to help free jailbreakers, unlockers, and vidders for this law's overbroad reach. So basically, the exemptions are granted are part of a statutory prescribed rulemaking process conducted every 3 years to mitigate the danger of the DMCA to eliminate legitimate non-fringe uses of copyrighted materials. In other words, protecting fair use. And this is big. This is a big one for the video remix artists that are currently thriving on sites like YouTube. You guys hear all the traffic going by? I think we had a motorcycle go by here a second ago. But anyway, and also they renewed a 2006 rule exempting cell phone unlocking. So that doesn't mean that Apple's going to unlock your phone. You're still going to have to jailbreak it. So that battle continues. But three major wins here. And it may make it safer for you to, you know, put a popular song inside a video you may create to post on YouTube. Now, not to say that they're not going to try to get it taken down by a DMCA notice, but there is a fair use. Now, my son's looking. What do you want to know? You want to use something? What do you want to use? You want to play video games? Did mom say it was okay? You have to ask mom. The little one's looking in, doing this. He's basically showing me the hands to play video games. You have to go ask her. You know, it's okay with me if your stuff is done, but you have to ask her first. All right. Facebook has moved the like button beyond the dumb grunt and adds comments to the like button. So this is over at ReadWriteWeb. That's their title of this. So basically, if you like a site, you can comment on it. So if you're liking Geek News Central, make sure you comment on it as well to tell you people why you like it instead of just, I like it. Hey, YouTube announced Friday, big news, or actually Thursday. It's a new way to embed YouTube videos. And they're basically creating an iframe class that allows you to drop the iframe right into your blog. And this is one way we're actually going to use this approach for raw voice and some of the stuff we were doing. We kind of thought against it initially, but now that YouTube is basically on board doing this, we're relooking at how we're employing our video player. So really what happens is you put one piece of code on your website, and now if someone comes onto your website with Chrome or a Safari or basically a HTML5 capable browser, they're going to be able to get the HTML5 version of the video, the H.264 video encode versus getting Flash. So this, from a battle point standpoint, in the Flash versus Apple and the, you know, the in basically Flash maintaining a stranglehold, you know, it wasn't just a few months ago when YouTube was basically saying, there is no way we're going to do this. There's no way we are going to abandon Flash. But this is big. I mean, this, in my opinion, this was like this. If Adobe's stock didn't go down today, I haven't checked, I wouldn't be surprised. This is going to make a major impact. And I can be honest with you, I'm happy with their decision. It really gives content creators so much more control. And you know, YouTube is the 500-pound gorilla. When they make a decision like this to make a move, it's big. Now, it's only in test. Doesn't work on everyone's videos yet. But the beauty of it is, it's going to allow all of your YouTube embeds to work on mobile devices. Now, people are going to have to change out whatever YouTube videos, that, you know, change out the code for the YouTube videos they have on their websites now to go to this new format in order to make that happen. But it really increases the viability of many people's websites that aren't really mobile ready. So pretty exciting stuff on that standpoint. I was just thrilled. I sent an email to everyone that does on my development team, everyone that I'm just like, woohoo, beautiful. And it was picked up by a lot of folks as well, but major announcement by YouTube/Google. Another announcement by Google was that Google Apps rubber stamp for use by the U.S. government. This just wowed me. Google has announced a version of Google Apps certified for use by the United States government. And this was announced during a press release in Mountain View. and it's called Google Apps for Government. Offers the same applications as the existing Premier Edition of online application suites. It carries the same price tag of $50 per user per year. And the company says it's the first outfit to offer a cloud computing suite to the federal government. I was like, whoa. And with all of the stuff that goes on with security and document control, and what I'd be curious is those of you that are govies, I'd love to hear, you know, if you're starting to see anything trickle down in the news about this, on what's going to be allowed, how you're going to be able to use it, how you're going to be able to implement it. Because, you know, that's basically putting our government documents, you know, of course, we've got 90,000 government documents up on WikiLeaks today, thanks to a traitor in the military. You know, so here we're thinking about putting government documents up on the Google Apps. We'll see. We'll see. I'll be surprised how fast that implementation is potentially made. All right, the Curiosity rover takes first drive. The next NASA rover to be launched to Mars took its first moves on Friday in a clean room on Earth. The Mars Science Laboratory, also known as Curiosity, moved about 1 meter back and forth during tests at JPL. The rover is the largest ever built for a Mars mission. It's scheduled for launch in 2011, 2 years later than planned because of really difficulties in building the large spacecraft. And it's powered by a reactor. And the rover is designed to operate on a planet for several years. So we may soon be on the way to Mars with another rover. Very, very cool. AT&T is targeting heavy 3G use in certain commercial areas, not by lowering bandwidth. They're actually bringing in Wi-Fi. Now, AT&T may not be able to expand its 3G network capacity, but it can expand its availability of free Wi-Fi hotspots in order to lighten the 3G data load. I've never found an AT&T Wi-Fi hotspot. What does it look like? Do you have to have a sign up to use it? I'm serious. I've never seen one. In any place I've ever been, I've never seen an AT&T hot zone. How do you use it? Now, it says the hot zones were introduced in New York City. Oh, the reason I haven't seen it is only in May. So it says the carrier is focusing on areas where there are consistently high 3G traffic and mobile data usage. Well, they're going to go into areas where they're being slammed and bring in wired wireless that is wired, and I have to go over their cell networks. Very cool. All right, are you one of these UFC guys? You like watching UFC pay-per-view events? I may watch a UFC event on Justin TV or Ustream. You weren't the one doing it, were you, that was streaming it on Ustream or Justin TV? Well, they're not very happy because the UFC claims that 36,000 people watch a live streaming feed of one of its pay-per-view events on January 2nd, followed by another fight uploaded by the same user 2 months later. They got 78,000 non-paying users watching. Now, if you know, these pay-per-view events are very expensive, and I wouldn't be surprised if someone is not going to really get hammered on this with a lawsuit. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, if you're pay for a pay-per-view event and then you live stream that pay-per-view event, man, stand by. That's not real smart. It really isn't. If you've had if you're a Citibank customer and you have the Citibank app on your iPhone, there's some bugs in it and not the type of info that not the kind of bugs you want to have. Citigroup has urged customers conducting mobile banking from their iPhones to immediately upgrade because a security flaw in the older app secreted account information on the smartphone. Whew. A prominent iPhone security researcher said it would be trivial for someone to access a hidden file if they obtained a lost or stolen phone. So upgrade your Citibank application, please, immediately. Hey, this is on the health front. And this is really exciting stuff. Sniffing allows paralyzed to interact with computers, navigate, and wheelchairs. Now, we know that there are approximately 1.9% percent of the U.S. population that has some form of a paralysis. I don't know what the total numbers are of folks that are fully paralyzed from the neck down. But according to the Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation, they've come up with from that organization. But this new device that's out is operated by no SNPs, allowing disabled people, quadriplegics, and those locked in by complete paralysis to use the computer operate wheelchairs. This is done in a study done in Israel. And by basically breathing a certain way, they can control a device. Costs a little under $400. It's a fraction of the $20,000 it costs for the system where they can blink at a camera. And while you don't get a very high word count on this, you're getting about 3 letters per minute on utilization using this technology. But the folks that really have no other options are ecstatic. And it says, such writing speeds, however, are greeted with enthusiasm by locked in individuals. The researchers wrote, the speed of this self-expression is less important to individuals who, put bluntly, have no other option. So I don't know, what is the, anyone is familiar with the system where they can blink at a camera to actually write? How fast is that? I'd love to hear from someone on that. I don't know, but about 3 letters per second is the speed on this device. So we think we're going to get to a point where it would be easier and we could come up with something more innovative for them to communicate faster, wouldn't you? You fly Southwest Airlines? Southwest has quietly updated their act of God list. This is lightning, weather, tornadoes, storms, floods. Now, in the God list, in other words, where you can actually get a refund for your ticket, their God list is where you can't get a refund. it's going to include mechanical problems. So if there's a mechanical problem, they consider that equivalent to rain, lightning, flooding. So putting mechanical issues in the same category as an act of God, I don't know about you guys, but mechanical stuff, I don't know if God intended on that or if that fits your definition, but it's kind of surprising that Southwest would do this because Southwest is known for their customer service. So I guess now war, earthquakes, and broken washers are all unavoidable events. And your level of compensation on that airline may be limited. So it might be a good time to ask at Southwest, what's the deal with that? Hey, here's an interesting one. 2012, because lots of predictions about what's going to happen in 2012. There's this stuff talking about the Mayan calendar, and all this other stuff, all the conspiracy theory. Well, how come that the LHC and the European Particle Physics Laboratory, CERN, and so forth, are shutting down all, not just one. We knew that the Large Hadron Collider was going to get shut down for maintenance in 2012. But why is CERN idling all other accelerators in 2012? Conspiracy? You tell me. Seems kind of interesting that all of them would be shut down. Hey, remember those piano players that used paper? And they had little dots in them. These are like real, like 19th century, early, like 1909, 1910 is when those would have came out. And you see in museums, and some people, actually my mom had one for years, and it worked. And why we ever sold it, I don't know. Probably worth $1 million now. But anyway, those piano rolls, did you know they were still copyrighted, protected under copyright? And that there is a couple of companies still out there that create piano rolls, believe it or not. Some discussions going on with them and copying those and getting the old rolls that are deteriorating backed up. Copyright issues. You know what? Where's the insanity going to start? Stop. You know what? If you are a piano roll enthusiast and you have a way to copy those rolls, copy forth. It's insane. One of the companies that still does piano rolls says, we end up agreeing that if I made an MP3 recording of less than 30 seconds off an old roll from a company that was completely out of business, kept it completely from my own use, and locked up so no one else could hear it, then I probably would not be sued. The company that was making piano rolls begged me not to use any of his company's rolls in this task, as he really did not want to have to sue me. I thanked him for his time. Ridiculous. Why even ask? Just do it. Hey, there's some cool camera software out there. Have you guys got old pictures? Like, looking down, you've seen these old style pictures in the black and whites that were taken off plates that were maybe images of city streets or so forth. Did you know there's a software out there now that you can superimpose that on top of a current day picture and slide it in to get it to fit so that you can do a here and then comparison? This is really cool stuff. This was over on the Gadget Lab website at Wired. And you'll definitely want to check this out. It's really cool. And but you got to know the location. You got to have a picture that's, you know, close to location as well. All right, now we're going to end the show on the last topic today before we get into the emails that come in on something that really that will make your mind go, oh, no. A gamma ray burst somewhere thousands of light years away could shut down photosynthesis in ocean depths at depths up to 260 feet. Gamma ray bursts are tremendously explosions detonated during a massive star's death. When stars eight times the mass of the sun or larger reach the end of their lives, they die in spectacular supernova explosions. The resulting gamma rays, as they travel through space and could strike the Earth over, you know, could end up really doing damage to life as we know it here. Wow. You know, that's the type of stuff you just don't have control of. What can you do? Nothing. You just have to deal with it when it happens, or if it does. Okay, let me go ahead and get into the emails from the show today, and we'll wrap this thing up. There was no voicemails, so if you have a comment on today's show, get on the phone, 619-342-7365, and I'm loading the comments up here, and of course, I didn't have my email loaded like a knucklehead. And let me go ahead and open this up. All right. First email is from Jason. Yeah, Jason, you're not Ryan. I agree. I apologize to Jason, who created our new video intro for the show. And I kept referring to him as Ryan. Jason, you have my apologies. And I have this starred here so that I know not to do that again. And I will put myself a little note. Horrible. Hey, I got an email from Barry. Says, hey, Todd, I continue to enjoy your show. To answer your question about where to view iPhone OS 4 advertisements, see the free AP application. The ads show up when one views specific news articles. I've seen two only because you mentioned them and do have to say they're very high production value. But other than to view these because you asked, I would have never clicked the ads. Thanks, Barry. Thanks for that feedback. So they just didn't like pop up. You still had to click on them to activate them, right? Again, it required you to click. Well, maybe they aren't going to be as effective as they thought. Got an email here from Mike. It's, hey, Todd, the reason for the reduction in spending by the Democrats is the upcoming election. They're realizing that Americans are aware of the deficit that our kids are going to be paying. Sadly, they're spending the money on pork to shore up the chances of re-election. I enjoy the show, Mike. You know, Mike, irregardless of the politics of the situation, I just found it very interesting that they went in and undid many of NASA's priorities that was laid out by the president. Very interesting. And still haven't had too much feedback on that, but only time will tell on how that ultimately ends out. I got an email from Frank, and I have to laugh on this one here. He said, hey, Todd, it's a hoax, Mom. He said, Todd, it's a hoax, Mom has to be one of the best, one of the most intriguing episode titles you have ever used. It got me to listen to GNC as my first podcast of the day. Well, Frank, maybe I'm going to have to start using more of those mysterious type of titles. And that was referring to basically my mom had sent me an email about Mars doing its closest approach to Earth in like 80 years or something. And that originated back in 2003. And that gets replanted here every couple of years. It makes its rounds. So that was a reason for the title on that. Got an email from Jason. He says, "Hey, Todd, Jason, iPhone Dev 3, you had mentioned in a recent show that Netflix streaming is coming to Canada, which is great. But less than 2 days after they did the announcement, Roger Cable, the only cable internet provider for much of Canada, announced that they are lowering their caps for downloads. Their light internet is going from 25 gigs down to 15 gigs, and their extreme is going from 95 to 80. Luckily, they are leaving existing customer caps alone, or now I am on extreme. Also, can you believe the iPhone 4 is coming to Canada this Friday? And as of today, Saturday, no company has started taking pre-orders or talking about upgrade options. Rogers hasn't even officially stated that it's coming out on the 30th yet." So here's the question, Jason. How much bandwidth are you using? You get 95 gigs now. What does your counter say you're using a month? I'd love to hear your feedback on that. Got an email from Bob. He said, "Hey, Todd, blue screens of death issues on the Deepwater Horizon." Yeah, I read about this too, Bob. This is makes you go, doesn't it? We'd be kind of curious if they ultimately find out that the massive oil spill in the Gulf was caused by a blue screen of death. You just wonder if someone's going to sue Microsoft now. That'll be the question. So link will be up to that in the show notes. Got an email here from Andy. He says, "Hey, no, doesn't have it." Basically, this is a content insider number 148. He says, I got suckered in. This was a PR email. Let's delete him. I got an email from Trucker Times. Says, newspapers changed, new business plan, copyright suits. An individual by the name of Steve Gibson has a plan to save the media world's financial crisis, and it's not the iPad. And he's borrowing a page from the patent trolls. And basically what he's doing is he is buying the copyright assets from news companies and then going out and suing anyone that has done verbatim copying of news posts from the specific website that own the copyright on the material. So I have this link up in the show notes. So in other words, be careful out there what you're quoting. Make sure you give good retribution back. Trucker Tom was all over the CNN host calling for a crackdown on bloggers as well. So he sent that link to me. I'll have that up in the show notes. I saw a... Here's something that it was pretty cool. This actually come through on my friend feed email, because I get a friend feed email every day on the top topics. And this was a post by Jeremy Zawadny. He talked about, is it better to buy or rent? And this is a pretty cool interactive graphic application that the New York Times put together. You got to check this out. If you're a renter, you need to look at this. If you're a homeowner, you may have to go back and see if you made the right decision. Go back. You got to check this out. It really shows out where the break-even point is on when you should buy and when you're losing money or when you're getting, you know, when you're gaining money. This is a type of tool I wish I would have seen 10 years ago. And they probably had it, but, never had access to that type of data before. But this is a really good one. I got an email from Dale. He said, "Hey, Todd, I did receive my swag package here in Northern California. Thanks, Dale. Got an email here from Andrew. He said, "Hey, Todd, here's some links. Thanks for all the great info week after week. Here's some links that I found to be interesting. It talks about Flipboard for iPad, Windows 7 Slates from HP, Nook for Android, Compact Camera Shootout, Pro DSLR shooting tips." Andrew, I hope you like that link I put up today about the, or what I'm going to have in the show notes on the DSLR getting destroyed by a laser from in a laser show. So that wraps up the comments on today's podcast. We've got perfect timing today. And I hope you guys enjoyed the show. It's been fun doing the daytime show, really. I'm not ready to like collapse and fall into a bed. And the office temperature only went up about 13 degrees during the time frame, so we did okay on that. But I'll have the show up on replay. Just those of you that may be watching this later, you may be on replay. But otherwise, for the rest of you, I'm going to get this thing produced and in the can so that you guys can get it downloaded and listen to it on your portable media devices. Again, get subscribed to the show. Come over to geeknewscentral.com and find all the links there. And don't forget our sponsors at GoDaddy and at GoToMeeting. Your support of the sponsors really keep the lights on here and keep my family fed. So we appreciate your support for that and your ongoing dedication to the show. And thanks for being part of the Ohana. Until Thursday afternoon, we're going to do this again. Thursday afternoon, I'm going to try to start between 12 and 12:15 my time, which is 6 to 6:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, or 3 to 3:15 Pacific. I hope you come enjoy and watch the show live. Until then, everyone take care and aloha.